Welcome to another episode of Before You Kill Yourself with your host, Leo Flowers. I am Leo Flowers. Today's guest is a returning guest, Steve Simpson, who is a child advocate. He has a story of growing up in a dysfunctional household with an abusive father. And here he's here to help you who maybe you've grown up in an abusive household. Maybe struggle with addiction or drinking or suicidal thoughts, helping you to navigate those emotions, building your self-esteem, learning how to avoid conflict avoidance. I'm sure there's a more articulate way to say that, but also learning how to express your feelings in appropriate ways. So we're going to get into all those different things. Welcome to the podcast, Steve Simpson.
Thank you for having me again.
Brother, I appreciate you being here. And so just to give people an understanding of your childhood, can you briefly describe for us, you know, the childhood that you grew up in and the dread that you felt, you know, sometimes when your father came home? What was that about?
Yeah, so and it's interesting. We'll also talk about, since we just had the holidays, might as well jump into that part of it too. So my father was a violent alcoholic, very abusive man. And by the way, I know a lot of parents kind of live two lives outside of this wonderful guy, inside they're notorious. Mine was winning no Academy Awards. He was the same way outside as inside. I don't know if that's a compliment to him or not, but it would be no shock to anybody that he was violent in the household. You know, I think today's times, protective services would have been called a lot earlier. And, you know, things are different a little today, but he is who he was. Just a violent man, always getting in fights. You know, if you went out to dinner with him and my mom, on one side, I love eating out. I'm in New York. I love to go to diners, stay there late eating. But the downside with him was, you know, sooner or later, if the waiter says the wrong thing, they're going to get in a fight and they're going to be pulling him out of the restaurant, you know. So it was always that dread. But he didn't turn it off at home. and of course, like you said, the dread always was when you hear this door open, you don't know what to expect. You never knew what to expect with it. Now, he might just go make a few jokes and go to sleep. And you might have been like, okay, I dodged that bullet, or not, you know. And one of the things I always joke about is my friends always say, you eat so fast. and that's my childhood. Because what do you learn? Get away from that table, man. The sooner you get away from him, less chance of getting abused that night. So I learned real fast to be eating. And it's a habit I have today. I slowed it down a bit. It's just my pace. It's the way, not that I'm trying to get away from the table now, my friend. It's just the way I learned to eat. But those are things when you're a child of an alcoholic or a child of an abuse, something that you just kind of learn and deal with. You know, another thing, myself included, usually us from abuse households, we get out of the house as early as possible, always hanging out with older kids. And the reason why, by the way, is if you were wondering why I always have older kids, because they have more freedom than I do, which means I can hang longer with them. It's always less time in the house. You know, one of the worst feelings, and people listen to your cast right now can probably relate, is, you know, when it's bad when you just hate coming home. You're putting that key through the door, unlock it, and you just dread it. You know, if you had one more friend that can stay an hour later, you would have stayed with them, you know. And there's another reason, too, to throw out there. That's why... I'm sure you've heard this, where you get a young girl dating much older guys. Why is that? You know, people have all these negative answers and labels on that girl. Well, I got bad news for you. Probably the girl was abused at home, and the older boyfriends got cars or have apartments, and they don't got to stay there. So while society is so fast to label all these names on these girls, she stepped over the guy's house, she's only 15. The real deal is, because when she gets home, her father's going to abuse her, or her mother's boyfriend, whoever the person, the abuser is in the household. So again, these are all pretty much the life story of myself. I mentioned last time, so I'll just say briefly, my first half of my school years, I was what's called a Z student, the opposite of an A student. I always joked about that. And in later years, I became an A student. And the biggest difference is, I never tried when I was a Z student, because I figured, why bother? I'm going to fail. Because, you know, from a little kid, when you hear things from the abuser, you're stupid, you're a failure, no one ever wants you, you believe it. Because let's face it, you know, I always say when hostages get taken, they get brainwashed. When soldiers get taken by the other side, can you imagine being from your little kid being told these things? Of course you believe them. It wasn't until I got involved with self-help and saw other kids in there. And the biggest revelation I had, I'll mention briefly for me, was the smart kids in the group were being called the same thing as me. I remember saying to myself, well, what's up with that? I am stupid. I'm like, why did you call you stupid? And the answer was, because you're not stupid. And because it's got nothing to do with it. We always blame ourselves. And this is what led me to venture the hopelessness and suicide, okay, from 11 years old on, is we really think everything is our fault. We think we brought the abuse on ourselves, okay? Abusers have a knack of convincing their victims it's their fault they're being abused. So therefore, you never report it because you think you're going to get yelled at because it was your fault anyway. Okay. And when you realize that even if I did good in school at the beginning time, the first few years, if I was a different personality, different person, if someone was a guy instead of a girl, girl instead of a guy, if you were straight because you're gay or gay because you're straight, whatever, if you were not who you were, it would have never made a difference. That man still would have abused you. And they just take things about you and throw them at you to make you feel that's the reason why. Okay. But an abuser abuses someone because they're an abuser. And that's it. And whether you're an adult even listen to, you might be in an abusive relationship right now. And you start saying, well, you know, they did say not to say this, or I did do that. That would upset. No. Being upset of something or abusing someone is two different things. And you can never make somebody abuse you. They just brainwash you into that. So for me, that's what my thoughts of all hopelessness. You know, for me, I always say, someone said to me, Steve, why does someone want to kill themselves? I don't get that. I said, because they lost all hope. That was me. I really thought it's never going to get better. And once you get to that point, unfortunately, you think that's the only avenue out.
You talked earlier about abuse, someone who's abusive versus someone who's upset. Can you speak more to that? Because I think a lot of people don't recognize that someone can be upset about something. They can be angry about something without being abusive.
Yes. And it's interesting you said that, because one of the lessons I learned, I was in foster care for a little while until my mom got her, God bless her, got her own place, done with my dad, and they gave her back custody. Okay. But I was in two foster homes. And one thing I discovered in those homes is it wasn't that they didn't fight the parents, because normal people get arguments with each other. It happens. But the revelation to me was I'm sitting there, and I hear a fight start, and my first, here it comes, you're bracing for the abuse, physical, verbal, something. No, they didn't call each other horrible names. They certainly didn't physically hurt each other. They just laid out their case and argued over whatever it was. And to answer your question, that was a lesson for me. Not to see that a family is perfect, because there is no perfect family, unless it's on TV. You know, to see how a healthy family, so to speak, deals with adversary, like you said. You could be upset. You can say, Leo, man, I hate when you say that. I told you upsets me. There's nothing wrong saying that, okay? Or, all right, you know, I thought we were doing this tonight, and, you know, I arranged my whole schedule, and you always change things last minute. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. You know, that's not abusive. That's giving your opinion. The person has a – but then you have to listen to the person, because sometimes – it's funny, one of the – priest in my parish said this recently. Some people, they're never listening to other people. They're actually waiting for them to shut up so they can make their next point, you know? And you have to learn to listen. Now, I made my point. Now, let me listen. Hey, Steve, I know it looked like that, but something came up last minute. I'm not purposely changing plans on you, you know? Or, you know what I'm saying? I don't feel well, so I'd rather not go to the city tonight. Like, so listen to the other half, you know? And if they don't have an answer to it, then you made your point. You know, but I think that when we come from abusive homes, an argument has to be a fight. See, a disagreement has to be a fight. It doesn't have to be a fight. It could just be a disagreement. And you're both. Hey, by the way, there might be some times when neither one of you are going to agree. And what's that famous line? We're going to have to agree to disagree. But then you move on. You don't label the person. You know, you don't give ultimatums. You know, another thing, too, we come from abusive homes. A habit is to brew over things, you know, someone at work or someone says something, and the rest of the day, the rest of the week, you just keep replaying it in your head over and over again. And then you build up anger towards them. And maybe it was one little thing, you know. And I used to, years ago, that open my mouth and blast them. And then you find out later it wasn't that bad of a thing. And I've learned in life, don't brew over things. Either make your case or let it go. Let it go. Okay. Because then you make it worse in your case. And then you're in a bad mood. You're walking around like this all the time. Even the person says something that hurt you, they only said it once. They hurt you once. If you replay it in your head over and over again on replay, you're letting them hurt you again and again and again and again and again. And I got to tell you something. Many times I bit my tongue. I didn't go right at the person. And they said something that was kind of snippy, kind of rude. Maybe you're doing someone a favor, and it seems like, I mean, recently, it seemed like they weren't appreciating this at all. And I was about to say, I don't see anybody else doing things for you, but I shut my mouth. By the next day, I got a text. I got out of church in the morning, got a text. Hey, sorry, I know it didn't seem like I was appreciative. A lot of my mind, this happened right before we spoke. Now, if I went right at them, I would have felt so bad. I would have made their day even worse. Now Steve's mad at me. And it would have caused a conflict. So I learned, to your point, you could have a disagreement. So sometimes just hold back. Maybe there's a reason the person's in a bad mood. I think because we come from abusive homes, we take it as abuse right away and go, and we launch right off. You know, my mom used to say, there's a saying called shoot first and ask questions later. I would say, don't shoot first and ask questions later. Keep that gum holstered. You know what I'm saying? Let's just see what's going to happen first. Now, I don't mean abusive behavior, once again. If someone's abusing you, there's never excuse for that. But I think we need to separate our minds. What is an argument? What is a fight? What is abuse? What is just someone in a bad mood?
You talked earlier, Steve, about that, the fear that you felt, the dread that you felt when you heard the door opening, when you heard the keys in the door and the door opening. Do you still have a visceral reaction to keys in a door, doors opening?
Not anyway. Funny you said that, because it took a while to get through that, but not in a while, you know. In fact, it's interesting, not to get a long time, but one stage of my life, I couldn't stand where I lived. It was weekends one place and then a week another place. And when you came over the bridge to where I was going, Long Beach, it was a noise. The car made a noise because it has that rubber part, because when the bridge opens, okay. That noise is to bother me. I know if I was going, that means you're going back there, this place, for another week. Years later, I used to go to the same place just to go to the beach with some friends. And I had to get used to that noise. Doesn't mean anything bad because you're leaving tonight. You know what I'm saying? You're not even going to that building anymore. The building doesn't exist anymore, quite frankly. So, yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, or dreading going home. Yeah, I don't dread going my place now. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing going on there, you know. So I think that, again, and look, some people have this at work. Maybe they hate their job. They hate going to the, you know. And I would say, someone, if it's that bad, reanalyze it. You know, because no one should live like that. It really is. It's a horrible thing. And again, it leads to either physical stuff or, again, suicide. Like I mentioned, you may have been dreading. We just went through Christmas. We wished ourselves Merry Christmas before the show started. You know, when you live in a house like I lived in, you dreaded holidays. So I want you to think what this means. At least school was an escape. I'm not home. He's at work. Okay. Holidays. No school. I'm stuck home. And he's going to be off from work at least a couple of days. That's like the nightmare for anyone living in an abusive home, alcoholic home. And this is where, interesting enough, and I'll bring up an interesting point that you probably relate to. But first, I'll say that, you know, what everyone's talking about, they're going to the grandma's or the mom's going to make this dinner. I love Christmas. I love it. I love the New Year's. And you're thinking, I hate it. Because, you know, and you know, the problem is you don't say that because, you know, everyone's fronting in schools. So you're like, yeah. But there's other kids, and you think you're the only person in the world because everyone's talking about this great time they're going to have. And you're saying, I must be the biggest loser on the planet Earth because, like, I'm dreading this. Now, the reality is, you say one every five kids is a child of an alcoholic. Okay. So you're in your class, just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Just keep counting. Okay. Which means there's a handful of the kids in that class at least that are going through what you're going through. Then you have the kids that aren't from an alcoholic home, but it's still an abusive home. But everyone's always fronting. So you're not really alone. And I tell people that there's kids in your class going through exactly what you're going through. There's people at work. You're an adult. Everyone works talk about, oh, I'm looking forward to the holidays. Half of them are lying. They really are. They're lonely. They're in bad relationships. But again, the impression is, I'm the only one. Am I that much of a loser? You know, but you're not. So the message is you're not the only one. But what to do? I mean, if you're in an abusive situation, get out of it. You know, we're so terrified to be alone. You know, the codependency sticks in, you know, or we're always afraid of the unknown. Because even though you're in an abusive situation, it sounds crazy, but you know what you got. And it's kind of scary saying, but I don't know what I got if I get out of this. But it will be better. Get over, if you can override that fear of I don't know. And people will say to us, well, that's crazy to want to stand abuse. As crazy as it sounds, it was still my bed I was sleeping in. You know what I'm saying? Even though I was being abused, it was still that house that's kind of, I don't know what's out there. You know, and that's the scary part. But it's a fake scary part. Because, you know, I had one person once say to me, well, he got abused and forced the can. I'm sorry to hear that. And I know that happens. But most of the time, it really doesn't happen. It really does. You only hear the bad cases on TV. But I knew because, you know, there's a network. And my foster parents, the other foster parents, and as I got older, I knew people that were foster parents. They're all great people. All great people. And I said, you can't tell people to stay in abuse this way because they're scared of getting abused somewhere else. That's like the wrong reason. It's, you know, it's a complacency, so to speak. So I would say, in a relationship, what if no one else wants to ever date me again? They will. You'll get people to date you. But, you know, you can't be in a relationship, you know, and getting abused. That, believe it or not, you're even lonelier. You think you'll be more lonely without one? You're wrong. You'll be less lonely. I mean, how many songs you hear about this stuff? You'll be less lonely. Although I always stress that people get therapy because you'll wind right back in the relationship the same way. You know, you got to find out. They'll seek you out. You seek them out. In the old line, someone says, I have the worst luck in relationships. My last six people I really, no, that's not luck. Okay. You're seeking out the wrong type of people. There really are good people out there you can be with. You know, well, I also want to spend the holidays. As interesting, I'm going to bounce this off of you, Leo. I saw some statistics saying there aren't, you know, I always, people, there's more suicide during holidays than statistics. Well, that's not true. There's more suicide some months to follow. Well, here's my answer to that. Not everyone, it's not, if trauma happens to you, you don't necessarily instantly go into suicide. It might, for me, it took years of building up and hopelessness. So maybe a trauma happens during the holidays, and maybe unfortunately it just plays on you and plays on you, and it might be 5 or 6 months later that you finally, unfortunately, now go to suicide. But that still was from the holidays. It still was from that drama, you know, like the whole shutdown situation. You know, you had kids trapped with their abusers, trapped. Okay, now people think that's done over with. No, you have kids, in my opinion, walking around like time bombs right now. Okay, that all this abuse was done to them, and they're filtering it, and they don't get help. I speak with a teacher's podcast, and I said, if they don't get help soon, they will hurt themselves or unfortunately kill themselves, and it will be from what happened 2 years ago. That's what people don't get. It doesn't have to be an instantaneous, spontaneous thing. Something happened yesterday.
You know, you growing up in an abusive home, I'm going to assume that there was physical abuse. And I know for so many people, a hug is something that can be so healing, to be held, to be. But if most of the touch that we've experienced has been in the form of abuse or hurt or just even putting distance, like don't touch me or not even being touched, it can be difficult to find a touch that we're comfortable with as adults. Is that what you found? Is there a certain touch that dysregulates you, or are you?
Well, it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny because, again, when I was 13, I joined the self-help groups. I remember the first couple of times when girls are going to give me a hug. Oh, I'll see you next week. And I was kind of like, you know, put off like that because, like, but it was nice. It was something friendly with me. I had a harder time, and you can figure out why, when if a guy would come up and hug me and mean it, because remember, the only guy that Fidza was my father, and that was abuse, you know. So I was kind of like, you know, like, all ready to be defensive. What are we going? We're going to be competing on the headlocks right now. And eventually, I also joined wrestling, by the way, which at least that was appropriate, you know. But in real life, no, the person was just being nice, man. They're showing affection to you. Like, hey, I haven't seen you. Give me a hug, you know. So like you said, it was pleasant, but I had to get used to it. And again, with the guy doing it, I was kind of on the defense, like, you know. But I realized this guy's not trying to abuse you, man. You know, they're really happy to see you. So once you get over that situation, realize that, and not everyone is trying to cause you harm. You know, I think that the other thing is, though, the mistrust, because when you're as a child, when you're being told how worthless you are and all these negative things about you, you don't think anyone finds value in you. So why would they be hugging you? Why would they miss you? You know, so I think that becomes into play also. That, like, is there another motive behind this hug? You know, is it something devious? Is it something sexual? You know, well, no, the person was seriously just, you know, they really do value you. They think you're fantastic. They love you. You know, they really did miss you. So I think that that's another situation, that self-esteem plays a bigger part in more things in your life than people realize.
And where was your mom in all this? You know, we're talking about your dad. What was your mom? Was she trying to protect you? Was she not in the
picture? Well, here's the whole thing. My mom had her own epiphany, so to speak, because my mom was for a long time your typical codependent parent. You know, even calls me Steve. She called me Steven. She told me that's what my birth certificate said. Okay, so Steven, I just you got to be quieter. Don't upset him. Don't upset him. You know, that type of stuff. And there are times, I mean, don't get me wrong, she would get in fights with him over that, but still allow it to happen. She wouldn't leave him. That's about, and she would get beat by him right in front of me. That's a devastating thing. And then you feel guilty. Oh, well, she slept with me and she got hit because of me. No, he hit you and she's defending you as a mother. You did nothing wrong. But the negative thing that parents will do, when you say things to your kids like, well, you really shouldn't have said that, you're confirming with them it's their fault they just got beat and abused. That's what codependents tend to do. And they have them walk on eggshells all the time, you know, and they defend the abuser. I mean, if a school teacher says something, you know, I might be suspecting, is everything okay with his dad? Of course he is. He's a hard worker. How dare you? I'm going to go to the principal. Sometimes the codependent, not abusing parent, is worse than the abuser. The denial is so thick in them. You know, they'll lie through the, you know, my kid just has ADD. My kid just has this. You need to work on that as the school. No, your kid was getting beat by his parent, or at a minimum, verbally beaten, which to me was worse than physical. And I always say that it's the verbal abuse that pushed me to suicide, not the physical. The verbal, constant battering, hopeless, you're worthless. So my mom, though, because of all the crazy my dad, she did put him forth to home, but she did leave him. She overawed her codependency and realized she can do without him. In fact, and I don't recommend this because I do think men should be paying the child support, but he paid so little, he's such a conniver. My mom actually said, keep it, just stay out of the lives. He didn't want any part of me anyway, you know. Just keep your money. Stay away. I won't ever see you again, you know. So I give her credit that she overrode that, okay, and just became a single mom working, you know, using more than one job. And but unfortunately, a lot of parents never override that codependency and to their kids leave the house. And a lot of kids resent it as time goes on, because one of the worst things that codependent parent can say, which is a false, is I only stay with him because of you. I figured, and the adult children will say, don't give me that. Don't you stay with him because of me so I can be abused more? Are you serious? You know, you stayed because you were codependent, whether it was a financial thing. And normally it's not even finances. Normally it's not even that. I'm telling you, it's normally just emotional codependency. He didn't mean it. And, you know, and he had a hard life. And unfortunately, the natural instinct of a parent, as you said, is to protect their children. I know some healthy moms would say, if my husband did that, he'd be arrested or dead or both. Touch my child. That's a natural reaction to that. Unfortunately, that natural reaction dissipates. I've always said that just like there Drinking is an addiction, drug abuse is an addiction, smoking, overeating, food, all these things can be, the gambling is an addiction. I feel that codependency is an addiction amongst itself. Because like any other drug, it gets someone to do things they normally wouldn't have done or not react the way they're supposed to react.
I know that you work a lot with children, and but also how old are you now?
58.
So, and you're 58 now. How would you suggest that a child asks for help and finds safe spaces versus an adult? Is it different?
It is different because an adult's an adult. I mean, I get it. You're codependent, you're scared, whatever it is, you're in an abusive relationship, but you're still an adult. You can get in the car and go. Okay. You can find someplace else to live, get another apartment, whatever. You know what I'm saying? A child doesn't have all that. The number one thing a child can do is, if they're in school, and they probably are in school, is get to that school social worker, get to that school counselor, psychologist, whichever one is in that school. Normally the social worker is more in touch. They have more of those and report the abuse. And I stress to a young person, it is not your fault. Two big things I stress to young people. I've done it in my talks, I've done it in my writing. One, I don't care what you were told. No one's going to think you're a bad kid because you're being abused. No one, because I thought. Here's, by the way, the second equation. People don't realize this. The child's also afraid of getting the other parent in trouble because they did nothing about it. You know what? Well, that codependent's not protecting the kid. The kid is protecting the parent. Okay, but I explain to them, you're not going to get them in trouble. You're going to get them help because they're going to be forced to get the therapy. They're going to be forced to leave this person where they're not going to get abused themselves. You're actually helping the codependent parent because in lots of cases, it's not the dad, it's the mom's boyfriend. And it's like the fifth boyfriend in a row that's abusing this kid. Your mom will get the help she needs to get in relationships where they're not abusive. So you're not going to get your mom in trouble. You're going to actually help her. If you have siblings, you're going to be helping them. Oh, I might upset the whole family. Well, my younger sister, my younger brother, he doesn't touch. He will. Just give, once he reaches a certain age, he's going to. Okay. You can prevent that from happening. Okay. So again, and I used to always say, Leo, I know what they're going to say. I know what they're going to say, the school counselor. And don't get me wrong. Some things they said, I knew they were going to say. But they said a lot of things I did not know what they're going to say. These school social workers have more at their access than you think they have to get you help. Okay. So again, number one source is school. If it's summertime, you're not in school. Sometimes, if there's not a community center, a local church, it can be a church you belong to, speak to whatever pastor is, if that pastor, you can go to a different church. One of these pastors, is because a lot of churches have outreach programs, okay? There's Catholic charities, but not just Catholic church, a lot of churches have outreach programs or people on site who are also social workers or who are used to this, okay? And again, doesn't be religion you even belong to. If you know there's one at this church, I heard they got some outreach, get over there, okay? And they might be able to help out and connect you and get you help. And again, get your other parent help, which is important. And they might even have groups. A lot of churches have therapy groups or self-help groups, 12-step programs that are free. And you can learn because, again, I stress to young people as well as older, you don't realize how much that abuse is affected. There are things about your personality that you think are you and you're ashamed of, but it's not you. It's nothing to do with you. It's part of being an abused child. That can go away. It's not permanent. People think, well, this is who I am. No, it's not. And all these anxiety that you always have on you, you think it's forever. No, that anxiety can go away. You know, and you don't need drugs to do it because it's only going to cause you more anxiety. Okay. Even if, you know, I smoke pot to get anxiety. No, it causes you more anxiety and you're smoking more to get rid of it. That's not the answer. You take care of your problems through therapy, self-help groups. You don't need to self-medicate. You've gotten through. How many celebrities have you heard say that? Okay. They were self-medicating. When they're doing it, they're joking about it. I'm not going to mention names. We've seen them on stage joking about having a joint. Oh. When they get help, they apologize and realize that was only hurting me even more. I wasn't dealing with my real problem.
I know when you were, I think, 11 or 13, you had thoughts of ending your life. What were the things that kept you tethered? Like what kept you going? What helped you to navigate past that and through that?
Well, it's interesting. Well, I started at 11, okay? But for me, it was always with friends. Like at 13, and we're going to do a whole episode on this, because I was basically living on my own. I know you had to have it. And I was 12 or 13 years old. My father grabbed custody, yanked it from my mom. I knew he was like, it's crazy. How do you, he's the abuser. Welcome to the family court system. Okay. And who has money? Who can get attorneys? And eventually it caved in on him, but he was able to do a lot of manipulating. Okay. And planted me in this apartment, left me alone there for a week. Somebody saw one girlfriend. He was doubling girlfriends. This guy, that was what he was doing. You know, back then I was like, what is he doing all week? I was a kid. That, you know, and then on weekends we'd go back to his other girlfriend. As a daughter, I go, oh, duh, he had at least one extra girlfriend. That's what he's doing. So that was a lonely time period. What kept me tethered again was two things. Friends. I had one friend in school, a great guy. Best person I could say is he was like Eddie Murphy. That another person, Eddie Murphy, and that's before Eddie Murphy ever was came out. So he wasn't imitated. Just that humor, and we just laugh together. We would just laugh all day at school together, have a good, and that kept me. I was looking forward to it, just hanging out with my friends that would laugh and stuff. And you might sound crazy because like I was going through just loneliness and hate, but the humor. And again, 2 weeks after my 13th birthday, joined my first self-help group, and that really, really got it together for me. You know, it really did, because everyone in that room was going through what I went through. And what a lesson of, you're definitely not alone, okay? Because everybody's sitting there, nods their head and going through the same thing, and just realizing that I'm not alone. And that's where the thoughts are killing. So, well, wait a minute, because their members of that group have been there for a while and their lives are okay now. So let me put this on hold now and see if I can get to where they are. Friends, but I'm also going to stress, you got to choose the right friends. If you're hanging out with friends that are abusive to you, that can happen too. Or friends that are getting high and getting drunk, you might think it's a short-time solution. That's going to cause you even more problems.
How did you even find a self-help group? Because I would think that at that age, I'd be too embarrassed or ashamed to, one, seek help, and then, two, to get help where I'm sitting in a room with other people and worried that, you know, maybe something that I share is going to come back to me in school or get back to my parents or something back into the community?
Well, two things. Once I was in foster care, like therapy is almost mandated at that point, okay, and they encourage self-help. But prior to that, even right before that, I was in a few different groups. I joined one. It was actually a friend that I shared some stuff with. He said, yo, man, I know there's a group of, why don't you try it out? You know, all right, whatever. I figured I was doing nothing that night. That was the time period I was in this apartment by myself. So I figured, you know what? Keeps it going a few more hours a night before I have to go home and be lonely. So, and the funny thing is, eventually I joined groups where there's some guys in it, but the first group I joined was all girls. And you'll laugh at this because I remember walking up the staircase and some girl pops her head out and her hair's flying all the place and hair goes back in and her go, it's a guy. And I thought, huh? Oh, no. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. You know, but I got to say, they made me, I mean, 13-year-old awkward kid to begin with, all these girls there. But I had to, they made me feel as comfortable as possible. They are smart, these girls, teenagers. Because I was going to sit at the end of the table. One got up from the middle. Oh, no, sit here. Take my seat. So I didn't isolate. This girl knew enough. How smart? What was she? Maybe lower, maybe 15, maybe? So I just sit in the middle of the table. But I realized, again, all of the same common problems. And one thing, you talk about touch, but this is like an emotional touch. They used to say a couple of prayers at the beginning of the meeting. I didn't know them. Okay, so I come back a week, when first couple of meetings, and one goes, look, I know you don't know the prayers, so I wrote them out for you. And I went home, and I had like tears in my eyes, because this girl thought about me during the week. Remember I said about being valuable to people, liking you? And she thought enough to sit there and write these out. I didn't get a prayer card. I wish I still had them, actually. But she hand wrote them out, okay, for me. And that was like, wow. How many years ago was that from now? And look how it still touches me. So just little things like that. And, of course, I realized out the gate it wasn't my fault. He drank. And all these things I realized. All the guilt. Man, because, you know, again, alcoholics, then they put guilt on you. You know, I mean, he'd be so drunk some nights, he'd just point to me. That was him saying, your fault. You did this. You busted up in my mom. Man, I found later on, he was drinking so many years before I was born. It wasn't even fun. I found his background eventually, how many times he got in trouble with the police, we didn't call them DWIs back then, but smashing the car up and stuff. Long before I was born, this guy messed his life up completely, you know. Tried to give a sob story. His first wife died. Oh, maybe his problems happened after that. No, because he was in the army before that, and he lost his rank because he beat some guy up because he was drunk. So it's like, oh, no. This is all on you. This is not on me. But these things come as revelations to you as a kid. But I got to tell you, man, as a kid, the weight off my shoulders. Now, eventually I joined some other groups and girls and got, you know what I'm saying, and mixed. But it made no difference, little girl, because like I said, we all related to the same problem. And one of the girls was at my bus stop, okay? Didn't know anything about her prior to that, you know? And it was one day I came to the bus stop. It was obvious I was not a happy camper. And he decided to come over to mine. I don't know why you stay away a week. He'd come home one night and wrecked everything, drunk. Just the fact you put a hand on me and say, you okay? I know you can't talk right now, but you okay? Yeah. Okay, well, you know, I'm with you. I'm praying for you. We can talk after school. You know, just that little, you know what I'm saying? Like someone was in my zone. You know, it wasn't me and the rest of the world. And again, amazing enough, as I look back to all the kids at that bus stop, they all had problems. I mean, like, when I really think about it, like, almost everyone had an alcoholic parent when I look back then, you know. But again, to break that isolation, to break that you're not alone. You know, it's such a cliche, you're not alone. You see, but that really does mean a lot to people. You're not alone, you know.
It means so much to feel like we're a part of something bigger than ourselves, but also that there are people who are willing to stand side by side or sit with us side by side. You know, you also talk about how to help people avoid people and events that can trigger these painful emotions. How do people do that? And I bring that up because I think that there are people who want to avoid and stay away from certain places or people especially, but they're afraid that they're going to do it in a way that offends that person and makes it even worse. It's like, if I tell this person no, that I can't show up, or if I don't return their phone call, or so how do people avoid people and events that can trigger painful emotions?
You know, it's interesting today. I'm not saying everybody, but people are a little more in tune today with anxiety and things like that. I mean, I give credit to some celebrities that have gone out there and really exposed themselves basically to get it out there. We still have a lot of work to do. So I say sometimes, yeah, give me a whole life story. But sometimes in most cases, you can say, look, I got some issues happening in my life. And if I go there tonight, it's going to cause me a lot of anxiety. I'd rather not do that. Could we do something else? Most of the time, you say that word anxiety, you got it, man. No problem. Okay. And if someone fights you over that, they weren't that great of a friend to begin with, and let them go and plan something else. Because if someone tells me, hey, Steve, you know what, the way I'm feeling tonight, can we push this up a little bit? Because I'm a little, no, you got it. You know, so I think honesty, you don't got to tell me a whole life story. It's okay, you know, but just let them know that there's something going on, or maybe something currently going on. The way I'm feeling tonight, I'm just not feeling like being with a bunch of people, but you want to just maybe chill and see a movie together, you want to get something to eat together, it's okay to say that. You know, nothing against your sister who's got that party going. You maybe we can hang out with a different time. Because let them know it's not the event. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes, you know, we get frustrated, good, we don't say something, but it comes off as anger, arrogance. I don't think I'm going to your sister's house. Now you're kind of coming off as being rude, as opposed to the way I'm feeling tonight, it's going to put me in a bad way. I don't be that way. Can we just do something else tonight? And maybe go see the difference, you know? And again, if that person is a healthy relation with you, you should be cool. Everything should be fine. It's when we bottle it up and we don't want to say anything, well, then reverse the roles. It seems like we're just being rude or, you know, mean to their friend. Well, what's wrong with my friend? You don't like my friends? Like, you know, they were nice to you the day. You know, it's their birthday party, you know, as opposed to saying, you know, listen, I know there's a lot of drinking over there and a lot of guys get drunk. That's okay. It's their business. I can't be around that. Like for me, I go to parties, people drinking is part of life. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I went to dinner with a friend of mine. I didn't drink. He had a couple of drinks. He didn't get violent. He didn't beat up the waiter. You know what I'm saying? That's his business. But if I know there's a place where these guys tend to get really loud and stupid, I will not go. I don't be part of that. you know, there are some bar restaurants where there's a restaurant part and they're drinking over there and they watch the game, and that's okay. They get a little loud, you know, if the team's losing or winning. But some places, you must know, there's always cops showing up pissed. I'm not going there, man. I don't need to be part of that. So that's my boundary. I know violence as a kid, you know what I'm saying? Drama. I want to be able to enjoy myself without it. So that's where you kind of toe the line.
I love that. And that's great, you know, just sharing that, the point that, you know, you fear the anxiety, or you may not be able to recover, or you just won't be comfortable. And you're right. If someone who really cares about you will not want to put you in a situation that makes you feel uncomfortable or increases your anxiety. And so the fear should not be so much, oh, I'm going to lose a friend. It should be that I'm going to end up, you know, resenting my friend or the situation because I did this thing that I didn't really want to do and that was uncomfortable. How would you recommend?
And you know, if they're a healthy friend, mm-hmm. you might get closer with them.
Yes.
Because of that, because your honesty.
Right. Because then you're encouraging, you're showing them how to be honest. And then you're leading by example. How would you suggest someone rebuild or build their self-esteem and self-worth? Because as you said, the verbal abuse for you felt more egregious than physical abuse, because now you have those words echoing in your mind and it's seeped into your behaviors, your thoughts, your emotions, and that can really destroy or dismantle someone's self-esteem and self-worth. What are the steps that they can take? Because I know you mentioned therapy and group therapy. What steps can they take to rebuild their self-esteem and self-worth?
Very important, because it's the stress. Any physical bruise I've ever gotten, cuts, well, to my knowledge, there's no scar. They're gone, you know? But the verbal stuff, those are deep scars. So I would say, so again, like I say, therapy, again, self-help groups. But by the way, just like medical doctors or chiropractors, sometimes doesn't seem working out, you go to a different one. Give the therapist a chance, by the way. I mean, in 2 weeks, you're not going to change. But if you see 6 months, I'm not feeling better, it's okay to switch therapists, by the way. They're human too. Just like you would switch, I said, a doctor, a chiropractor, a dentist, just like you switch around. So I want to keep that in mind too. You should be feeling better after a certain time period. If not, something's up. Now, the other thing is, we almost just discussed it. Who are you hanging with? Okay. Because people sometimes gravitate to people always saying, well, they like to tease a lot. No. If someone's constantly putting you down, a tease is a tease. I got some friends who tease each other, lightheartedly laugh, and we move on. I'll make fun of myself sometimes. You know what I'm saying? But if someone's constantly putting you down, you got to analyze who you're hanging with, because the very friends you're with can be draining on you and pulling on those scars, okay? And sometimes we don't realize you're accepting something as normal that's not normal, because that's what you thought because you grew up with it. You want to be people that, I'm not saying every time they see you, they're going to compliment you. I'm not saying every time the first 10 minutes they have a dossier on how great a person you are. Of course not. But you want people that legitimately can compliment you when you're with them, are happy to see you. You know, like, I don't know if you have any pets. You know, you come home, your dog, bah, 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 the dog's like, you just saw him this morning, but he's just freaking out. Even some cats come over, they're purring, they're rubbing against your leg. They're happy to see you. Okay, I'm not saying I want my friends to rub against my leg and, you know, start jumping up and down, but the same token, it's nice when people will smile and happy to see you, you know, and they're out there. So I think that you need to analyze who you're hanging with. And it's more than you think. You can be in therapy, but you're still with people that are putting you down or just aren't lifting you or constantly, constantly being negative. That's not going to help you either. Okay. Neither is the same relationships. Okay. If you find yourself being their attorney, now what do I mean by that? You always defend, well, he or she shouldn't have said that, but this shouldn't have said that. I know you think this, but you don't know them like I know them. Okay. When you start saying things like that, okay, you're constantly defending like you're their attorney, there's something unhealthy about that relationship. If you're constantly explaining to your friends, you don't know them like me, you just see this part, baloney. There shouldn't be a part for them to see, is what the problem is, okay? So again, in relationships, I don't care if you go to two therapists and two different self-help groups, if you're still in that, it's just taking you down. It's just taking you down. So the way you heal the self-esteem is, again, is be people, and also we're all able to do things. I'm a writer. I love writing. I love public speaking. Maybe someone, I'm not a good artist at all. I do stick figures. Okay. But maybe you can draw, and that's phenomenal. Okay. Maybe you can sing, whatever you're such a play guitar, do something that you really enjoy. I don't care. I'm not saying you're going to do it professionally. I didn't say that, but try to do something you enjoy. Take that guitar out or get the dust off it and maybe play it every other night and just have fun with it. You know what I'm saying? And when you get good enough, maybe bring it to a party and entertain some people with it. You know, I know like someone I know used to sing in school, and you know, school's over and they're an adult, they go to work. But the church had a choir. They never thought of themselves doing a church choir. They just said, I'm having a blast because I get to sing again. I thought I'd never sing again. It's like this person's self-esteem is, and the people probably say, wow, you have a nice voice. You know, and he's thrilled, you know what I'm saying? Because he's like, I forgot about that. So try to do things also that you enjoy, but I'm going to caution you. If you're writing poems or you're drawing pictures, I said earlier, who are you hanging with? Don't show them the negative people. They're only going to say something negative to you. It's going to hurt you. Show them off the people that are positive. I learned that lesson the hard way in my writing, and I realized, you know what, Steve? This was your fault. Look at this person. This guy knocks everything all the time. Why would you show people that are, I'm not saying they have to say it's the greatest thing I've ever read. I'd say that. But show the people that are positive people and you get positive feedback. And nothing, but once I started in school, once I started doing good in one or two topics, the rest were just easy. You know, it was just easy to excel in them because I can't be dumb in this if I'm smart. Now, I might be better in some topics, but I can't be completely inept in one thing. It's impossible. And it just, once I had the positive reinforcement, okay, so do things. There's got to be something out there you do. Or maybe, I don't know, adult educational or something. Maybe teaching you how to draw, teaching you how to do things like that, whatever, crafts. I don't like crafts, but some people do like crafts, okay? Maybe they'll do that for you. I don't know if it's swimming or something. I don't know what it is. But, like, join something like that at the local library, you'd be in shock how you suddenly, your self-esteem starts getting up there.
I appreciate you sharing that. Is there any part of your story to wrap up here that we haven't discussed that you think would be of value to listeners who might be struggling in an abusive relationship, trying to get out of an abusive relationship, or trying to recover from some type of abusive relationship?
Yeah, it's amazing. Again, abusive relationship is like an addictive drug. Like, you know, someone's drinking or smoking or whatever they're doing. Finally stop it. What do they always say? I never realized how much that drug affected me and how happy I could be if I stopped it. Same with abusive relationships. When you are out of it, okay, I know you're terrified of being alone, you're going to take a deep breath and say, I never realized how happy I can really be. This was draining me so much in my life. I can't believe it. So that's one part that I'm going to give to you. And the other thing I said is, problems happen in life. We all got stuff thrown our way. But don't ever think that problem is going to devastate you. I always say to people, think of a problem that you had 5 years ago, a big one. Oh, yeah, this is going on. Now it has no power. It dissipated. Think of one 2.5 years. Oh, I was going through that back then. So-and-so died. But you got through it, and it no one has before. Whatever problem you have now is, it will lose its power over you eventually. No problem will last forever. So I always say to people, a line I always say is, do not make permanent decisions based on temporary situations. So again, don't make permanent decisions based on temporary situations. And it's all temporary. Just like those, this problem. Now, maybe there's things you can do to get faster. Again, therapy, or do some actions to make that problem go even faster. Okay. But again, anyone I have known over the years, I've known many from my volunteer work who either tried suicide myself, thank God didn't die, or thought of it, but didn't try it. We're all glad, all of them, because somehow, some way, things got better. And I know it sounds like another cliche. Things, just when it gets worse, when things spin around. Again, you might have to motivate it with therapy, with a self-help group, something like that to yourself, okay? Or again, if you're a young person, get to that school person. You work in big companies, some HR departments can refer you to places, you know? But I promise you, I'm always amazed at how fast things spin around when you start doing healthy things, like dominoes, things that just fall into place when you start getting healthy. It's amazing. And you suddenly have abilities you didn't think you had before, or you can handle things better, or maybe something happened in your past. I can't let this go. When you don't self-medicate and you're getting therapy, suddenly, oh, I really can let this go, you know, and it loses this control over you. So again, the word is hope. I know you had, I drive by people with Christmas lights. I love when I say joy and peace, and those are all, but hope. I love when I see the word hope out there, because there's always hope. You may not realize it, but there is hope. And when there, and that means things. So again, that's my advice to people in abuse situations, or thinking of suicide.
Penultimate question. Always imagine there's one person listening in who may be on the precipice of wanting to end their life. Before you kill yourself, what would you say to them, Steve?
First off, and I'm sure you've said this, the suicide safe line, hotline, give it a call immediately. Okay. Listen, but listen to what they have to say. Okay. Do not be alone. Get out. Go somewhere. Again, I don't care if it's a church singing group. I'm preferably a 12-step program, preferably a self-help group. But get out. Get out of the house. Be with people. Do not be alone. Okay. If there's no one you can call, get to the shopping mall, get to the library, whatever. Get out. I guess the churches are good because they always got something going on. So get in there. Speak to people. Again, if it's a church, maybe speak to the pastor. Man, I'm really thinking of this. Speak to people. Okay. I promise you, I know you. I was in that position, and I really thought it's not getting better. It's never going to get better, okay? I really believe that, and it really did get better. So my last thing to say to you is, but dial that hotline right away, okay? Pretty sure it's 1-800-273-TALK, I think, but you probably know it by heart by now. But again, get out there right away, but do not be alone. Get out. And by the way, if you go to school, go to work, okay, don't stay home. Get up and go to school. Get to school. Get to work. If you're in some activity you're in, a sport, something, do it. Go. Get out of the house. Go. Okay? I learned that when I stay home by myself, it's a dangerous place to be. Dangerous place to be. Be with people. Surround yourself with people. That's what you need to do. And whatever you do, I beg you, do not self-medicate. It's going to make you more depressed. And by the way, and whatever religion you are, I don't want to know about it, get out there and say a simple prayer, God, please help me. I'm asking you. I'm actually asking you for help. As simple as that sounds, you'll get your answer.
I love that. Yeah, I've often I've spent many a times on bended knee in open churches. So very grateful for those churches keeping their doors open and during the off hours. Last question. What are you looking forward to in the next 24 hours?
Well, this is an easy one. My group that I run is tonight, young adult group. So I always look forward to that. Hear whatever stories I want to hear. Yeah, so I'm really down with that for tonight. And yes, I also always bring some snacks to it. And I'll admit to you, I'm looking forward to the snacks too. There. So that's my next 24 hours. Okay. And also some friends I might be seeing during the week and looking forward to their company. But tonight, got my group and I'm always down with it.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve, for being here. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Remember, this podcast is not a substitute for you calling the 988 or any of the other 800 numbers listed in the show notes. You can chat, talk, text. You can go to thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching with yours truly. Let's get to tomorrow together. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.